Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Spill the Beans, a candid conversational piece on all things life and career. My name is Ty Blair, executive director of the awesome nonprofit organization When You Give a Bean Water, a collective hub of resources for families of color to utilize on their own terms. And for today's episode, we will be diving into the career of software developers. Now, under the BLS.gov website, they have it listed under software developers, quality assurance analysts, and testers. But for the most part, I'm going to focus primarily on software developers. All right, so let's dive on in. So what do they do? Software developers create the computer applications that allow users to do specific tasks and the underlying systems that run the devices or control networks. Some of their duties include the following. They analyze users' needs and then design and develop software to meet those needs. They recommend software upgrades for customers' existing programs and systems. They design each piece of an application or system and plan how the pieces will work together. They create a variety of models and diagrams showing programmers the software code needed for an application. They ensure that a program continues to function normally through software maintenance and testing. They document every aspect of an application or system as a reference for future maintenance and upgrades. Software developers, quality assurance analysts, and testers, they're all involved in the entire process of creating a software program. However, developers may begin by asking how the customer plans to use the software so that they can identify the core functionality the user needs. Software developers also determine other requirements, such as security. They design the program and then work closely with programmers who write computer code. However, some developers write code themselves instead of giving instructions to programmers. After the program is released to the customer, a developer may perform upgrades and maintenance. Now, as far as the types of software developers, you have application software developers who design computer applications such as games for consumers. They may create custom software for a specific customer or commercial software to be sold to the general public. Some application software developers create databases or programs for use internally or online. Next, we have software engineers. They take a broad view of a project system and software requirements, planning its scope and order of work. These workers may direct software developers, quality assurance analysts, and testers. We have system software developers who create the operating systems for the public or specifically for an organization. These operating systems keep computers functioning and control most of the consumer electronics in use today, including those in cell phones and cars. Often, system software developers also build the interface that allows users to interact with the computer. Developers who supervise a software project from the planning stages through implementation sometimes are called information technology or IT project managers. These workers monitor the project's progression to ensure that it meets deadlines, standards, and cost targets. Now, as far as the work environment goes, so software developers held about 1.6 million jobs in 2022. And the largest employers of software developers were as follows. We have computer system design and related services at 33%. We have software publishers at 11%. Finance and insurance at 10%. Manufacturing at 8%. And management of companies and enterprises at 5%. Developing software is usually a collaborative process. So as a result, developers, quality assurance analysts, and testers work on teams with others who also contribute to designing, developing, and programming successful software. And most of them typically tend to work full-time. Now, how to become one, the education behind it. So software developers typically need a bachelor's degree in computer and information technology or a related field such as engineering or mathematics. Computer and information technology degree programs cover a broad range of topics. Students may gain experience in software development by completing an internship such as at a software company while in college. For some software developer positions, employers may prefer that applicants have a master's degree. Although writing code is not their primary responsibility, developers must have a strong background in computer programming. They usually gain this experience in school. Throughout their career, developers must keep up to date on new tools and computer languages. Software developers can advance to become project management specialists or computer and information system managers, positions in which they oversee the software development process. Now, important qualities that you need to have if you want to become a software developer. Number one, you got to have analytical skills. Software developers must evaluate users' needs and then design software to function properly and meet those needs. Number two, communication skills. These workers must be able to give clear instructions and explain problems that arise to other team members involved in development. They must also be able to explain to non-technical users, such as customers, how the software works and answer any questions that arise. Number three, creativity. Software developers must be innovative in their approaches to designing, identifying problems with, and improving computer software. Number four, detail-oriented. These workers often need to concentrate on many parts of an application or system at the same time, and they must pay attention to detail when looking for potential areas of user error. Number five, interpersonal skills. Software developers must be able to work well with others who contribute to designing, programming, and testing successful software. And finally, problem-solving skills. Because these workers produce software from beginning to end, they must be able to solve problems that arise throughout the design process. Now, as far as pay, the median annual wage for software developers was $132,270 in May of 2023. So the lowest 10% earned less than $77,020, and the highest 10% earned more than $208,620. So that's a very good salary there. Now, as far as the top industries, we have software publishers at $143,210, manufacturing at $138,100, finance and insurance at $132,900, management of companies and enterprises at $131,370, computer system design and related services at $127,880. As far as the job outlook, the career is projected to grow 25% from 2022 to 2032. There's about 153,900 openings for software developers that's projected every year on average over the decade. Now, an increased demand for software developers will stem from the continued expansion of software development for artificial intelligence, the Internet of Things, robotics, and other automation applications. Software developers are likely to see new opportunities because of the increased number of products that use software. And in response to concerns over threats to computer security, organizations are expected to increase investments in software that protects their electronic networks and infrastructure. This investment could result in an increased demand for developers to create security software and for quality assurance analysts and testers to create and execute software tests. So definitely a high demand for that. All right, so let's get into some demographics. So as you can see, we have 78% of software developers were men. And then we have 22% that were female. And then to the right, you see here that we have the demographics broken down by race. So 48.5% of software developers are white, 34% are Asian, 8.1% are Hispanic or Latino, 4.8% are unknown, 4.4% are Black or African American, and 0.2% are American Indian and Alaska Native. So as you can see, we don't really chop in any of like the majority when it comes to software developers. We're in a very low percentile. Now, some of the challenges. Now, I was reading an article that was showcased in InfoWorld on August 24th of 2020. The article was entitled, Black Developers Tell How the U.S. Tech Industry Could Do Better. They interviewed, I think it was four individuals that were a part of the software developer career and just gave their perspective, their insight as far as what they've been through, how they achieved everything, and then what could be done to make this industry more open and diverse to Black and brown and minority individuals. So it said that the number of computer science graduates, a big source of the software development community from minority backgrounds, still remains stubbornly below 10% of total graduates in the US. Now, a lack of senior sponsorship and effective role models combined with ineffective hiring and retention incentive structures for managers has seen Black talent wash out of the industry more often than rising to the highest level. So one of the people that they interviewed, his name is Nick Caldwell. At the time, he was the VP of engineering at Twitter. It was a role that he started in June of 2020. Prior, he had held senior positions at Microsoft, Reddit, and Google. He grew up in a predominantly Black neighborhood in Maryland, and he was fortunate enough to graduate from MIT in 2003 with a degree in computer science and electrical engineering, with a specialty in the then nascent field of machine learning. So as far as he goes, he was saying that getting through the undergrad computer science program at MIT was the hardest challenge that he had ever had to experience. I quote, the biggest challenge as an African-American person was isolation. The sheer difficulty of the work, not having people I could talk to, and fear of failing or falling behind, I got into the mindset that it was a personal challenge to power through it all by myself. Nothing has been as difficult for me since going to MIT for undergrad. Now, that was a very powerful statement. The isolation piece. So you finally get into a really good college. You are a part of a community of people that you would think you would automatically bond with since you all have the same, you know, excitement for the same career, but you still end up dealing with segregation in a sense, isolation, where you don't feel as welcome because you're not part of the predominant people that are in that program. So going from MIT to Seattle, it gave him a soft enough landing in the corporate world that he ended up staying there for 15 years. He said, I quote, "I stayed in the same team at Microsoft for longer than I should have. I was afraid to take on new opportunities because of how far I had climbed the ladder. I was making good money, had stability, and didn't want to screw things up." So this is another thing that definitely ran home to me. The fact that we tend to stay in positions and stay at jobs way longer than we need to just because we are afraid to pivot or try something different in the sense that what if we fail, or what if it becomes too daunting of a career, becomes something that we can't handle? Are these jobs really going to accept us? So I found that very interesting that he as well stayed in something way too longer, and he admitted that he stayed way too longer than he should have. So knowing what he knows now, what advice would he give to a younger version of himself? He said, "It took me a long time to realize that my skills and abilities was all the safety net that I needed. Beyond that, he has grown to appreciate developing knowledge of the business he is working for beyond the code base, and to value his network as highly, if not higher, than his formal engineering skills." He said, "The code you create as an engineer is a depreciating asset, but your network is an appreciating asset." So definitely networking, getting to know people, building up on those relationships, that's an appreciating asset because you're able to connect and hopefully work with others, and they'll be able to give you a good word in the future. So he believes that the industry is open and inclusive in the way anyone can submit a pull request to GitHub. But there is another level around it, being welcoming of diverse perspectives and inclusion in a way that attracts more diverse talent. Getting better representation in tech is something that he admits is a complicated problem, but one that could be improved upon with some relative simple steps. He said, first, we have to embrace new funnels of talent for entry-level positions beyond just candidates with the traditional four-year college degree. Those candidates must then be supported with mentorship, sponsorship, and apprenticeship programs to avoid churning out. We see a lot of people dropping out of the industry, he said, so you need to give a feeling of community and safety. If a company doesn't have enough to do that themselves, they should fund those people to do that externally through groups. So second, he says, tie goals related to diversity and inclusion to executive leadership's incentives, and you will see change immediately. Now, that was something very interesting as well, especially with affirmative action no longer being a thing in this day and age. I feel like there's no longer an incentive or any major reason for any of these companies to hire more diverse, minority, Black, African American people, because there's no incentive at all for them anymore. So that's definitely going to be a challenge for us trying to get through that door. He said, historically, there has been a frustrating stigma associated with investing in diversity and inclusion efforts. Recent events have pulled in more people who were hesitant or afraid to help. Now is the time to act as a mentor, or even better, a sponsor for the underrepresented in tech. And lastly, he said, be visible. He said, this helped me be able to speak at events and network with venture capital groups, all things he said that he had put off in the past. So being out there, again, networking, getting to know other people, not being afraid just to get out there and network, because those are your most important assets compared to just getting the career, getting the degree. All right, now next, we have Anjuan Simmons. So he isn't currently, or in 2020, he was an engineering coach at Help Scout and the author of Minority Tech. He was born and raised in Texas, and he went to the University of Texas at Austin and then later at Texas A&M. So Simmons, he was fortunate enough, he said, to benefit from a high school program that looked to get more Black people to see themselves as engineers, not something that all kids can claim. He said that made it feel within reach to me as a student. So those programs are vital. They're key. Us Black individuals being able to be exposed to these different types of programs and careers from the beginning, from our youth ages, will definitely help kind of guide us and kind of help us into getting into different programs or even careers that we didn't even realize that we, you know, could excel in or actually enjoy. So with an electrical engineer degree under his belt, he landed a job and he was one of the partners that was also a Black man, and he had done good work diversifying the talent pool that allowed him to see himself more at work. However, he often found himself the lone Black person on a team throughout his career, and he was regularly overlooked as a team lead by clients. He gives an example of a typical experience he had. He said, I would be the team lead, and my team and I would be holed up in a conference room at the client site. A member of the client executive team would walk into the conference room and assume that one of the white members of my team was the team lead. The team member would point to me and let that person know that the questions they were asking had to be answered by me. Those are not overt racist actions, but part of a systematic structure where there are not a lot of Black people being represented as leaders in the industry. So I'm sure many of us that were ever in a lead position had that same or similar experience where someone that wasn't aware of our roles would step into the situation and automatically assume that a white counterpart was that lead, or that white counterpart was someone that they needed to go to immediately to ask questions, to do whatever, because they automatically assume that those people are going to be the leaders of whatever, you know, projects and things that are going on. So that's definitely something that hopefully will and definitely needs to change going forward. So the importance of these role models for people in technology from minority backgrounds cannot be underplayed, and they often become important sources of sponsorship and mentorship. He quoted, I had experiences being sponsored during my career. One of my first projects was led by a white man, and we had to deploy software to hub sites in Lagos, Hanover, Dubai, and Cairo. He picked me to be his tech lead. That was someone who lent me some of his privilege to do that. He notes that networks and routes into tech have opened up for people of color. And he says that I see more Black people in the tech industry, but there is still a lack of representation that's missing at the senior level. So definitely you got to act like you're just a startup of one. That's something that he definitely preached about. You have to build your expertise. You have to do marketing, and you have to understand personal branding. You have to look for investors. Those are the mentors and the sponsors. So definitely, like the former guy said earlier, groundwork, networking, putting yourself out there, getting to know people, talking with people, you know, co-collaborating, putting yourself out there. Like they always say, closed mouths don't get fed. So that's definitely a common theme that I see amongst this career. And then the last person that I will talk about is a woman named Valerie Phoenix. She was a senior software engineer at logistics software startup Mastery Logistics Systems, and also the founder of Tech by Choice, an organization aimed at increasing diversity in the science, tech, engineering, and math industries by offering low to no cost skill building events and virtual gatherings. And that's a big thing because a lot of times costs can get in the way of us being able to get involved with things. So for something to be low to no cost is definitely a bonus. So she was born and raised in California. She studied psychology. And then it was there that she took a keen interest in the engineering side of the business, seeing a big career opportunity in software development. So she started to learn how to code in HTML and CSS on her own time. So she built a website for a mural reveal that she was working on as part of her art class. And this caught the attention of one of her professors at the college's MetLab program. And there they specialize in developing mobile web applications for the university and some external clients. So she stated that MetLab was a great support system. And even after she landed the job, they would help her with her resume and would always share her wins with her. So she definitely had that network, that sponsor, that mentor, someone to definitely help to look out for her. So this was a welcome change from her previous role where she encountered resistance to her transition into engineering. She said, "I was one of the few women and the only Black person who worked there. So I think that added to their displeasure or distrust of my ability. I had to deal with the engineering lead who didn't really like to see my transition into those roles. So I was given tasks way out of scope and didn't have a lot of help because of that." So that's very sad to hear that just because I guess she didn't start out immediately in computer science, they probably didn't take her as serious. So they, you know, kind of put her in situations to try to prove that she really didn't know what she was doing. And that's very unfortunate. But she continued to sharpen her skills. She said, "My only option to stay in these positions was to learn and to learn quickly." And that she definitely did. She said that the next step in her career was the scariest, which was landing a bona fide engineering role. Her mentors at the MetLab proved invaluable here, helping her to hone in her resume and prepare for technical interviews. She soon found herself as a junior developer at Zenith Insurance, where she was not only the youngest person on the team, but also the only Black woman. There, she learned the value of process and project management skills before returning to the startup world with mastery in 2019. So what would she tell a younger version of herself? She said, "I wish I knew I didn't have to learn all languages and frameworks and should focus on one and master that before moving on. Knowing when to leave a company is also important to understand. When a company gives you a task that you are not ready for, the market or outdate your skills, when a company gives you tasks that don't make you ready for the market or outdate your skills and you get stuck, that is when it is time to look elsewhere." So she doesn't see the software developer community as a particular open and inclusive place. She said, "I want to say we are trending in the right direction. And it is nice to see corporates recognize a problem and speaking out. And it is nice to amplify Black voices. But if you aren't paying them properly and establishing proper policies, all of this support and donations mean nothing." And that's very true. You can talk all you want, but if there's no action behind it, then there's no real change that's being implemented. So she said mentorship plays an important role, specifically people who are willing to give up their time to push underrepresented groups. To make the next step in your career, write that first book or speak at a conference and get paid for it, she says. Only then will retention rates go up for diverse candidates. So again, she's kind of in that mindset of just being out there, getting your voice out there, speaking up, putting your face and your name out there so that way people can kind of see who you are and hopefully build that trust with you to be able to continue your career. So then she, you know, created Tech by Choice. And she said, "Being a self-taught developer was hard, and I relied on community support to do that. But even those communities were not that accessible to me. Some courses cost $100, so I had to decide whether to pay my phone bill that month or take the course. So that's why Tech Choice is great, because it offers events and online courses that cost as little as $5. And it is focused on getting people in, but also leveling people up from entry level to the board and C-level who make these decisions and write policies that will actually make tech diverse. So what is her next step? She said management. She said she hasn't cracked that code yet. So she's definitely looking to elevate and continue forward in her career. And with that being said, that concludes this month's episode. Thank you guys so much for continuing to support, continuing to watch these. Hopefully you can watch and share. Follow me at Give a Bean Water on all social media platforms. Stay tapped into the website, giveabeanwater.org. And until next time.